Mass shootings seem to be happening more and more frequently, yet we're not seeing much in the way of action. Thoughts and prayers are offered by government officials while gun rights groups continue to funnel money into congressional races. After each of these shootings, when the question is raised, the common response from elected officials is, "This is not the time for a discussion of gun control." The Sutherland Springs massacre was almost 2 weeks ago. Las Vegas was 6 weeks ago. Would you believe the attack on Sandy Hook Elementary was nearly 5 years ago? When is the time for a discussion of how to end the gun violence, or better yet, action? That's our question on this week's Eastern Standard. Send us an email to wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, a tweet at wekuest. In just a few minutes, we'll open the phones as well. It's time for Eastern Standard, right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. As of yesterday's shooting, Wednesday, November 15th, in Northern California, where four people were killed, America has suffered through 317 mass shootings this year alone. That number is up from last year at this time. And on this week's Eastern Standard, we are raising the question, when is the time for a discussion of how to end the gun violence? As we've commented that frequently after these shootings, elected officials are asked about their opinion about gun control or legislation, other action that may at least make an effort to have an impact on gun violence. And the common response that we hear is now is not the time to have that conversation. And of course, our question today is, when is the time to have that conversation? So in the studio, we have a couple of guests. We have a guest on the line to be part of our conversation today, and we're going to ask you to raise your questions, your comments, or even your personal stories during this week's program. Let me first introduce our guests, and then I'll tell you how you can get in touch. Up first, we have Mark Bryant, a native of Harlan County who now resides in Lexington. Mark created the nonprofit Gun Violence Archive that collects the information regarding instances of gun violence in America. The Gun Violence Archive is an effort to collect statistics that the government is not capturing. Mark has been featured on various media reports on national programs as well as regional programs. Mark Bryant, thank you so much for being in the studio with us.
Thank you.
We also have with us Wesley Morgan. Representative Wesley Morgan is representing the 81st District, Madison County, in the Kentucky legislature. Representative Morgan has proposed legislation allowing Kentuckians to carry concealed firearms without a license. It would allow people carrying concealed deadly weapons anywhere license holders are already allowed. The Republican from Richmond is a former ATF agent. Representative Wesley Morgan, thank you for being with us once again.
Thank you for having me.
And on the phone line this morning, Connie Courtney. Connie is the Kentucky chapter lead for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Mrs. Courtney became involved in the issue of gun violence prevention after the Sandy Hook shootings, again, 5 years ago in 2012. She joins us by phone from her home in Crestwood, Kentucky. Connie Courtney, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
You are welcome to be part of our program with your question, your comment, or your personal story. Write to us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. In a little while, we'll get some callers on the air. Feel free to call in now if you choose to do so, as long as you know that you may be waiting on the line for a little while. 800-621-8890. That's 800-621-8890. 8890. And let's begin the program with Mark Bryant of the Gun Violence Archive and talk about the nature of the problem. First of all, what my producers gave me here, the figure that I just quoted a moment ago of 317 mass shootings this year alone. Did I see you nodding that was correct?
Actually, it's up 1 to 318 from something that happened last night.
Wow. You tell me about the Gun Violence Archive and what that's all about, and then maybe give me an update on those statistics.
Gun Violence Archive is a collective of about 20 researchers. We have software engineers, we have systems folks, we have a collection of masters of library science and information science people that dig through 2,500 to 3,000 law enforcement and media sites every day to scour what the state of gun violence actually is in America. We find that if we look at FBI numbers or CDC numbers, they're lagging by 18 months, whereas as I told you before the show started, I had to amend my numbers for this show to add one because of a shooting at 2 o'clock this morning in Louisville. So we're a lot more able to provide clear details and a granularity that federal government has just not been able or willing to do. We can get you down to block level on everything that we do.
How is this funded? How does this happen? I didn't realize you had such an operation. It sounds like a small business.
It's a busy business. We have funders in Washington, and it's the same people that fund the Sunlight Foundation. So they're not pro-gun. They're not anti-gun. They are pro-transparency. They want to see accurate, honest numbers being presented so that we can all be talking from the same page. So we're not having one group of people saying there's 2 million defensive gun uses a year and another group of people saying there's two. We want to know what the honest numbers are.
And your gun violence archive is available online for public consumption at any time?
We have anybody can use it. We have a database that has an awesome search engine in it. We have journalists from all over the world utilize it. We have Congress uses it. Legislatures throughout the country use it. We have academia using it for research everywhere, both in the United States and a lot of other countries.
I did ask you before the program to come prepared with some statistics. So where do we stand in terms of totals, the number of gun violence incidents, number of deaths this year? I know you have some history going back a few years as well.
Looking at nationally, we've had 13,606 killed as of today. Or as of actually probably last night, and another 27,745 injured. That's nationally, and that does not include the number of suicides, which are about 22,000 a year. So when we look at our 13,000 to 14,000 to 15,000 per year of killed, we have to add another 20,000 to 22,000 on top of that for veterans that have killed themselves. That's about 20 a day and other folks. So that's the national numbers. On the Kentucky numbers, I brought several years' worth of data. From 2014, we had 512 people shot or killed. That means either killed or injured. 512 in 2014, 657 in 2015. 789 in 2016, and we're already at 712 for 2017. We're going to project a little over 800, I think.
Do you go into the causes and why? Well, this is obviously a dramatic increase from 500 in 2014 to 700 already this year.
We collect 125 variables, potential variables on every incident. So we will know if it's a defensive gun use. We will know if a home invasion was involved. We will know if gang activity was involved, drug activity, domestic violence, all sorts of variables. If a child picked up a gun that his father carelessly did not lock up, we will have that marked. We will have if a child kills another child, if teens are playing with guns, hunting accidents. And again, hunting accidents are not malicious gun violence. They are gun violence and their misuse of weapons. So we mark those as well.
Mark Bryant is the creator of Gun Violence Archive and with us in the studio for this week's Eastern Standard. Let's turn to Connie Courtney, the Kentucky chapter lead for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Connie, tell us about your organization. What do you do?
Well, Moms was founded 5 years ago after the shootings at Sandy Hook schools. Shannon Watch, who's a mother of five from Indiana, watched with horror, as we all did, as the events of that day unfolded. And she just decided at that point that she had to do something. There had to be something done about this issue, because we had just had the shooting in Colorado at the theater, in the summer. So this, just really... she wanted to find something. And when she looked online, she couldn't find anything that was, you know, kind of like the Mothers Against Drunk Driving for gun violence. So she started a Facebook page, and, I mean, our organization has just taken off from there. We have chapters in every state, you know, that work at the state level and the federal level on, you know, all types of different issues surrounding gun violence prevention, safe storage of weapons, domestic violence issues, and gun issues. You know, we just kind of work on all the issues, suicide, all of those areas, you know, is something our organization is involved with.
Why your personal interest in this? You became interested following the Sandy Hook shootings. Of course, all of us are horrified by an event like that and care about it, but you've chosen to take action by speaking out.
Right. At the time of the shootings at Sandy Hook, I had a first grader, and that shooting just shook me to the core. And I grew up around guns. My dad was a hunter in southern Indiana. So, I was used to being around guns, but it just seemed like our culture had changed. And I felt like I needed to find out more about what the gun laws were in our state. And as I started doing the research, you know, I became aware of just, you know, how easy it was for people to get weapons, dangerous people. And Kentucky at the time had just passed and gone to, in fact, January 2013, you know, that open carry was allowed in, you know, in the library and zoos. And, you know, I just wasn't paying attention before. And that just really woke me up. And I knew that I needed to get involved. And I sincerely believed then, and even more so now, that there is something that we can do to try to curb this epidemic that's, you know, happening in our country.
Well, what is the action? Your group is Moms Demand Action. You say there's something we can do. What is the action your group believes can happen?
Right. We think the number one thing that we can do to help keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people is to close loopholes that are in our background check system. And, I mean, this has kind of been just come to the forefront over these last couple of shootings, because we think it's pretty easy for felons and domestic abusers to get easy access to weapons. We also do a lot about, you know, guns in sensitive areas. We're very concerned about guns on campus. That's another issue that we've worked on. We worked in here in Kentucky and, you know, throughout the country, other chapters have. We also have a program called Be Smart, which talks about safe storage and keeping guns, you know, stored safely when in your home, in your automobile, you know, keeping kids, you know, not having access to easy weapons. And also in respect, as Mark mentioned earlier, with the suicides, we discuss, you know, looking for the signs of depression in teenagers and having a gun in your house and how to store that properly if you're going through a situation with, a teen that is depressed. We also, you know, we respect the Second Amendment. We just think that with rights come responsibility, and we just think there should be more responsible focus on gun ownership.
Connie Courtney is with Moms Demand Action. She's on the line with us from Crestwood, Kentucky this morning. We have in the studio Mark Bryant of the Gun Violence Archive, and in a few moments we'll get to Representative Wesley Morgan, 81st District Representative from Madison County, Kentucky. Representative Morgan proposed legislation allowing Kentuckians to carry concealed firearms without a license, and we're going to hear all about that in just a few moments. We invite your questions, your comments, your personal stories as we talk about this issue of gun violence, the official topic of our program. When is the time for a discussion of gun control or gun violence? 800-621-8890. If you're on the line, thank you for doing so, and we'll get to you when we can. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Send a tweet at wekuest. That phone number once again, 800-621-8890. It's Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. The issue of gun violence, gun control, what action can be taken to curb gun violence in our country in the wake of mass shootings, such as the recent shootings that we've been hearing about, mass shooting as recently as yesterday in Northern California. Mark Bryant, you said there was there another that has come in onto the scope since then?
A small one. And it's sad that we have to direct these as large ones and small ones, but one with four in Richmond, California.
Okay, I guess that must be the one that we're referring to.
No, though, the one that you're referring to is Corning, California, the one where...
Two in California in the last 24 hours.
Both on November the 14th, yes.
All right. Mark Bryant is with the Gun Violence Archive based in Lexington, Kentucky. Connie Courtney with Moms Demand Action, and Representative Wesley Morgan is with us in the studio. Representative Morgan, thank you for taking the time to be with us. You have introduced pre-filed, I guess, legislation for the 2018 General Assembly regarding firearms and concealed carry. Tell us all about it.
Well, basically, this filed a pre-filed bill that basically is called Constitutional Carry, which basically allows anyone 21 years or older who does not have some kind of a prohibiting something in their background, such as being a felon or something like that, to carry a firearm without a permit. Basically, that this goes back to the Constitution. The Constitution says that the Second Amendment to the Constitution says that the people's right to bear arms shall not be infringed. The legislation I've actually filed, really, there's no need for it because we actually have it in the Constitution. It would be the same thing as saying that trying to put restrictions on the First Amendment, that you couldn't speak out somewhere. You know, if you have it in the Constitution, the only thing you can do is that you have to change the Constitution. And there's procedures for that. If people want to do away with firearms, they can start a movement to repeal the Second Amendment. But you know, I always say, let's take Virginia Tech as an example. One person kills 32 students on Virginia Tech's campus. And that's the prime example of one bad person with a firearm with 32 individuals who didn't have one. So, I'm just really afraid that to prohibit firearms in any respect will take them away from people's defense and be preyed upon by individuals who get firearms.
Representative Morgan, you acknowledge that the Second Amendment covers the entire country.
It absolutely
does. The Constitution of the United States applies to the entire nation, I guess the territories as well. Why did you introduce this legislation?
Because we're having laws passed that having a permit is a violation of the Second Amendment. It doesn't require a Second Amendment. It says shall not be infringed. Now, in my English language, that means nothing can be done to change that. So a lot of these laws that we're passing does not do anything to curb the violence. What we really need, what we really have here is a breakdown of our justice system more than we have anything else. We need really strict laws that says if you use a firearm during the commission of a felony, that you're going to go to jail. You're 10 years, you're not going to pass go, you're not going to collect $200, you're going to a maximum security prison for 10 years. That's what we need. And make it make it punishable by the deed that you're doing, not that you own a firearm that is okay with the Second Amendment.
What are you hearing from your colleagues in the Kentucky House? Senators, other Republicans. You are a Republican.
I am.
And the Republicans have the governor's mansion, the House, and the Senate now. What do you think about support and the chances of your bill?
Well, I really haven't had a chance to talk to them about it, but I can tell you that most of the representatives in the House of Representatives carry a gun. And they carry a gun for fear of being attacked because they're a legislator. So, we have several state police that guard the chambers. All the time that we're in the chambers, it's guarded by the Kentucky State Police, and they're carrying guns. So really, again, what we have here, we have a problem of mental illness, and a lot of that is caused, to be quite candid about it, is caused by the venomous exchanges that we have in the news media. The news media inflames so many people, especially the exchanges that are between the Republicans and the Democrats. We have so much hatred being spewed in the public forum now that is creating a lot of problems. And then, of course, when you have guns or cars, you know, there's a lot of people that's been run over by cars or run over by trucks. And then just drive down the highway. You're mortally in fear that someone's going to, get road rage towards you because you don't know what's going to happen at any moment. And so, but I believe that we need firearms to protect ourselves. I will absolutely fight to keep them available to the people who want to keep them.
Your proposed legislation, and correct me if I'm wrong, would still allow punishment for places, persons who are carrying concealed firearms in hospitals, police stations, courthouses, government meetings, and areas primarily dedicated to the consumption of alcohol. And any other exceptions?
Well, age, you have to be 21 or older.
Okay.
So, you know, and I've had actually had some bad emails sent to me, you know, chastising me for even putting the 21-year limit in it. But
what about schools, universities?
Well, the schools, I believe, again, how do you kill 32 students? One person has a gun. No one else has one. So I believe that everyone should have the right to defend themselves. Now, of course, now most students that goes to college is under 21 years old. You know, a lot of these places, you walk into a store or a restaurant, it says firearms not allowed on the premises. Well, that might mean something to a law-abiding citizen, but it doesn't mean anything to someone who's going to go in there and start shooting up the people sitting in the booths having breakfast.
So would your legislation affect the right of business owners or property owners to say you're not allowed to bring a weapon on my property?
We did not introduce that, but that is one of my beliefs, that that people should have the right to protect themselves at all time, no matter where they're at.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. Representative Wesley Morgan is here with us, and Connie Courtney of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. So what is your reaction to the proposal by Representative Morgan?
Well, there's so many things I want to start with. First, you know, he mentioned the Constitution, and there are restrictions on the First Amendment, on what you can say, and you can't yell fire in a theater. And the courts, which is their job, the Supreme Court, to interpret the Constitution, have upheld various, you know, concealed carry permitting systems throughout the country. You know, Justice Scalia said that there are limitations that can be placed on that. So, you know, that has already been interpreted by the Supreme Court. So that argument is just not valid. Last year, when we went to discuss, last year it was Senate Bill 7, you know, the police are very concerned about abolishing, you know, the permitting system in the state, because they felt like this puts them at greater jeopardy. When they approach a vehicle before, they knew if someone had a concealed carry permit. And, you know, it gave them more knowledge. And so they were very concerned about this bill just because they thought it put, you know, their officers in greater danger. And they were there to testify against the bill. So, you know, that is our interpretation. We think it also does away with concealed carry. Kentucky has a really good concealed carry permitting system. You know, there's training involved. There's an accuracy component to it. And it also requires that the state police run a background check monthly on all of those permitting systems so that we can see if someone has a felony conviction or a domestic violence issue. And so Kentucky does a really good job of that. And so abolishing that and the training component just seems very reckless, in my opinion.
Let me turn to Mark Bryant of the Gun Violence Archive. Connie referring to Kentucky having a very good concealed carry permitting system. What do the statistics show in terms of gun violence in Kentucky versus other states? Do you have those comparisons?
I do. A good example that I've been using for 4 years is comparing Kentucky's gun violence to that of New York City, which most folks consider a fairly tight regulatory system. They have good laws in place. They have laws in place to keep people, if you don't have a reason or have a concern to have a gun, it's hard to get it. It's just hard to get a permit. But looking at the numbers, and I've lost them here for a second, but give me just a second.
You have a lot of numbers.
There they are. In Kentucky in 2017, we have had 240 people killed. 243. I updated the numbers yesterday from the 11th. 243 people killed. New York City, the five boroughs, 245 people killed. That's two more people killed with a population of an additional 4 million. That means that Kentucky's rate of gun violence is double that of New York. We have a total of 711 total victims shot or killed. Again, these are not including suicides. In New York City, the number is 694 for a population that is double Kentucky. California has the same general statistical averages. We see that states like Kentucky, Missouri, Louisiana, Alabama, Tennessee have a higher rate of gun violence because we have more lax laws. Now,
what about Chicago?
Okay, good. I'm glad you brought Chicago up. Chicago's not in the top 10 for rates of gun violence. New Orleans is. St. Louis is in the top 10. Baltimore is in the top 10. Chicago's about number 12. Now, if you want to bring up Chicago, and I like that, Chicago has reasonable gun laws right now. They used to be very, very strict. And everybody uses the argument from the right that says, well, Chicago's got the strictest gun laws in the country, and they don't, look at all the shootings in Chicago. Back when Mayor Byrne was the mayor and the Blues Brothers was the top movie of the year, 1984, Chicago had the toughest gun laws in the nation. Over the years, the NRA has spent millions of dollars getting those laws removed or weakened, and now we have 600 shot in Chicago per year. New York and Los Angeles have a combined population of 8 times that of Chicago, and they don't have as much gun violence. They have more gun regulation.
Let me raise this question. Representative Wesley Morgan, you mentioned the issue of, for instance, school situations, a Virginia Tech shooting. Was it 32 that were killed?
Right.
One person with a weapon was able to kill 32 persons. And you're implying that if someone else had a weapon that they could use against the shooter in many of these situations, that would improve the situation, would reduce the number of deaths. It's been proposed. Was it the Attorney General of Texas? One of the state officials in Texas commented regarding Sutherland Springs that proposing that maybe people should carry a weapon to church.
I can tell you, our churches, all of us are carrying now because we're not going to sit there and be sitting pigeons when someone walks in the door of our church and shoots us all up. They will find that practically every person in there is armed.
That's the same thing they were suggesting about Sutherland Springs, that most of the adult men in there were armed.
They were?
Yes. Well, that was not a gun-free zone by any stretch of the imagination.
That's the first I've heard that they were armed.
So you would, again, you would encourage carrying a weapon in situations where you might feel
in today's environment, I don't see where you have any choice. You know, it's like I said, you can't even drive between here and Lexington that you might get into a road rage incident. You don't know what these people are doing. I mean, we just recently had a situation in Richmond where a doctor from Indiana pointed a gun at a driver going down the road, and if you remember, he got arrested and got charged.
Would you have suggested that the driver return fire?
If he'd been fired upon, yes, he would.
So then the car wreck that ensued after that would hurt people that had nothing to do?
The doctor did not fire.
See? So if you're
– he pointed the gun.
But if you had had a gun and you would have shot at him because he pointed at you?
Well, I would suggest nobody points a gun at me.
I don't argue that point. But the question becomes, are you responsible then for the car wreck that occurred?
No, I would not be responsible for anything. If a person points a gun at me trying to end my life, mm-hmm. I'm not responsible for anything other than to protect my life.
Really?
Yes.
Connie Courtney of Moms Demand Action, your reaction to this exchange.
Yes, I think that it's this mentality that it just has escalated this fear in our country, is that, you know, we have to be vigilant at all times. I have to have my gun with me. You know, it was interesting to hear Representative Morgan talk about carrying, you know, in the legislature. Well, that's because they allow guns, like anybody can walk into the legislature with a weapon. Okay, so they allow guns.
Let me get that correct. Let me clarify. Are weapons allowed on the floor of the House and Senate?
Not in our chamber.
Not on the floor, but in the annex.
In the buildings at the state capitol.
Yes, absolutely. And the reason I know this is because a couple years ago when we were up there on an advocacy day, there was a group of open carry enthusiasts who followed us around the whole day with their weapons loaded. So and that was perfectly legal for them to do that. And they tried to attend our meetings. They tried to intimidate us. So that's how I know that law pretty well. But it's this ramping up and this selling of fear that that the gun lobby has just perpetuated and flooded our country with, and that it's just, and there's only one reason, and Mark knows this, why they do this, and this is so that they can sell more weapons. They're trying to create this constant, where everyone is anxious and on edge, and that I go to the grocery store every day with, four kids, and I don't feel the need to have a weapon on my side. Because I know statistically a weapon like that is more likely to be used against me or by one of my kids for suicide or something like that. So, I just don't buy that argument.
It's been stated that following these mass shootings, these major incidents, gun sales they go up, they increase. Is that a verified fact that we know for to be
certain? It has been in the past. This last two are not indicating similarly. The reason in the past was the NRA was extremely good at selling the fear and uncertainty and dread that Obama's going to get our guns. And then, of course, Hillary's going to get our guns. And so they jacked up the fear. They jacked up that your guns are going to go away. And guns, after a large shooting, people would go, oh, something's going to happen, so we better get what I'm going to get. And that has changed a little bit over the last 9 months.
You don't believe that they were after our guns?
No. I talk to the people on a national level that present the legislation in Congress. I talk to them on a weekly, monthly basis. I know what are in those rules. Nobody was trying to take your guns. That was paranoia.
What happened to Social Security? Social Security recipients. What happened about that?
Yeah, Ronald Reagan took the Social Security system out of its own system and put it into the general fund back in 1981.
I'm talking about if you draw, they were going to make it a requirement. If you draw Social Security, you could not own a weapon.
Where? Who made that law in
interested
where?
In hearing, the Obama administration. We'll be interested in hearing more about that. We do need to take a break. We want to get some listeners involved in the conversation as well. 800-621-8890. A couple of calls on the line. Thank you for doing so and for being patient with us. You can send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. We'll acknowledge a couple of the emails and a couple of the tweets we've received before the program. And we invite you to be part of the show. Representative Wesley Morgan is here with us. Connie Courtney of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Mark Bryant of the Gun Violence Archive. Our phone number again, 800-621-8890. Our show is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations, and our topic, when is the time for a discussion of how to end the gun violence the way we promoted it? Following shootings, we always hear representatives, elected officials, not necessarily just representatives, but we hear officials saying, now is not the time to discuss gun control. And our question is, when is the time to discuss gun control or other efforts at ending gun violence? Let's get some listener comments and interactions on the air here. Let me first acknowledge we had a tweet from Philip who commented before the show the answer to that question about when is the time to have that discussion of gun control. His answer, never, C2A, meaning the Second Amendment, go ban something else. This question from Eric, a concerned citizen. Based on the Second Amendment, I'd say the time to address gun control was when the militia stopped being important to America, about 1810. The Second Amendment refers to a well-regulated militia. I'm not sure exactly the position that this emailer is taking, but I guess assuming that conditions have changed in 200 years.
Well, we do. We have a standing army, so...
Likewise, now let me pose this question to any one of you on the panel here. How might the Connecticut Supreme Court case filed by some of the Sandy Hook victims' families against gun manufacturers impact legislation around guns in the future? This, I guess, came from a listener, Andrew, the Connecticut Supreme Court case. Connie, do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I haven't read the latest on that, so I don't really feel like I could. I know it has gone back and forth, and there was a ruling recently. I don't know if Mark has any updated information on that.
I have a little bit, but it's, to be honest, I have not followed it as well. I know that they're asking the Supreme Court to reinstate the lawsuit against the Bushmaster people and because of the way they have marketed and their level of responsibility in the Sandy Hook shooting. I don't know where that's going to go. It may go to another dead end. It may open the door so that there can be a court case and let the justice system decide whether it's right or wrong rather than using a the peace. The there's a law that Congress had that that does not allow people to sue gun manufacturers,
right.
And it will see that that needs reviewed by the Supreme Court.
Let's talk to Brandon from Georgetown. Brandon, thank you for being patient with us and staying on the line. Go right ahead, Brandon.
Yes, a few things I wanted to point out here as briefly as I can. I'm a former federal agent and also a retired teacher. And a general student of the Constitution history, so it's a few points. To the restriction on yelling fire in a theater, you have a perfect right to yell fire in a theater if there's a fire. What's being talked about by your two guests here who have a different view of our constitutional rights is that somehow the government has the ability to interdict your God-given freedoms, not to act when you break the law. So that's where the conservatives would come from on this issue of constitutionality. And also, a regulated and well-regulated militia, if you read the history and the background of that period of time, there was a problem with the militia, which the militia is the armed citizenry responsible to show up for military duty, not having good equipment. So that's what the regulated part of that is. And then to Representative Morgan, I would strongly ask that you look toward legislation to end these gun-free zones. That's where the problem is. As Representative Morgan pointed out, the criminals do not, by definition, follow the law. So seeking to prevent these things, then sort of a mind policing type thing is a dead end. The only thing that is effective is interdiction. And finally, to Mark, I was very intrigued by your assertion that there were armed citizens in Sulphur Springs. I follow this quite closely, and this is the first time I've heard this. Could you please cite your information on that?
Well, I can't take it off the top of my head because, to be honest, I looked at probably 250 different police reports, interviews with the sheriff, interviews with the FBI. I probably dug through 2,000 pages of stuff on that particular incident over the last couple of weeks as we try to make sure that we have accurate data. And that's one of the pieces that we found, that several of the folks in there were armed. The original...
Well, that is breaking news.
Well, no, it's not really breaking. It's not breaking
you're
news.
You're the only source. You're
no.
the only source that has claimed this.
No. I got it from others. So I can't possibly be the only source if I don't...
I would suggest maybe this points to maybe some of your other research, because these fabulous numbers you're coming up with, and talk about creating hysteria, you're playing loose with the numbers here.
Well, excuse me, but don't accuse me of playing loose with the numbers when you'd have
you
no idea
me.
What
you
you're talking about.
Breaking news.
All
you
right.
can't cite me a source.
Brandon, thank you. We really appreciate you raising these questions. What I would suggest, coming from the point of view of media, which not necessarily is always trusted, but I would suggest that no matter what the assertion, what Mark says about the persons at Sutherland Springs in the church having weapons, research it, look it up, find a valid, credible source.
Yes.
Representative Morgan, you mentioned a couple of issues of potential action, executive action by the Obama administration. We should look those up. We should find sources for those.
And
then fake news becomes facts.
That's the reason GVA began.
And let me...
I would like to just jump in here and talk about the caller brought up the issue of gun-free zones. And I want to just kind of clear this up because there was a study done between January 2009 and July 2015. There were 133 mass shootings. Of those, only 13% took place in a gun-free zone. I think Mark can probably attest that most mass shootings actually occur in private residences or public places where, you know, it's perfectly fine to carry a concealed weapon. So that is another one of those, like, talking points that the gun lobby likes to throw out there, but it's just really not a valid point.
Yeah, gun-free zones are a red herring. People like to say, oh, it's a gun-free zone. Well, if we use the last couple of shootings, the one in the California neighborhood, that was not in a gun-free zone. That was in a perfectly legal place to have guns. People could shoot anywhere they wanted. The Sutherland Springs Baptist Church was not a gun-free zone. The Las Vegas concert, while the concert itself may or may not have been a gun-free zone, the shooter was shooting from 400 yards, so it's kind of a moot point whether or not anybody had a J-frame or a little Glock in their pocket to shoot back at 400 yards. Little Rock, now that was a gun-free zone, and it was ignored. 25 people were injured. Orlando, similarly, that was a place where you should not have had guns. So there are gun-free zones, but most of them, public places.
Our guests for the show are Mark Bryant of Gun Violent Archive. We have with us Representative Wesley Morgan, District 81, representing Madison County, and Connie Courtney of Moms Demand Action. Still time for you to be on the program with your question or your comment at 800-621-8890. Let me pose this question to our guests. We do have callers waiting, but I think this is an important question. Folks talk about the government wanting to take away your guns, the government wanting to take away our rights. Going back to civics and history and so forth. Isn't the government in this country of the people, by the people, for the people? Isn't the government the people? Mr. Morgan, you're elected to represent the people of Madison County. Your title is a representative, meaning that those of us who live in Madison County, we expect you to represent our opinion. So it's when we talk about a conversation about gun control, a conversation about one of these issues, isn't that the issue? What do the people want? And then your job is to take it forward.
Well, I think my district's overwhelmingly for possessing their firearms.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the position I am. That's the position I've always been. Of course, I'm from Eastern Kentucky, and I was raised with guns in the house. And I was given a .22, I believe, age 11 or 12, and I was taught how to use it, and I was taught how to fear it. And most of the problems, a lot of problems with guns as far as actions are concerned is, to be honest with you, is the parents don't really take time to teach their children about guns, and that's negligence on their part. They really shouldn't have a gun if they can't even show their children to stay away from it or how to use it when they're training them how to shoot. So, but I mean, there's all kinds of issues, and there's good arguments on both sides of this issue, but at the same time. It is our right to carry a firearm, and I will carry one every single day. And most people that I know are carrying them also. And now ex-law enforcement like myself, we basically are always going to fall on the side of possession of the firearms.
A question by email from listener Carl. He says, I would love to hear the representative explain how his proposed legislation does not conflict with the Second Amendment. He said, shall not be infringed. How does placing an age restriction of 21-year-old not conflict with shall not be infringed? Can't have it both ways. Either you think shall not be infringed means exactly what it says, or you don't.
Well, sometimes when you present legislation, you try to do it in a way that it will pass. And, you know, the first thing you would be attacked on is, okay, so you're allowing a 5-year-old to possess a firearm, right? Well, I don't think really that that's what we want to do. But you know, he has an argument. The way it reads gives blanket permission to possess firearms. However, I couldn't believe that our founding fathers intended on children to carry guns, but so, he has a point.
So you're saying that you are for regulating firearms to a certain extent?
No, I'm saying that in my personal opinion that the founding fathers did not intend on children carrying guns.
So you're willing to regulate to a certain extent that you think is reasonable. Other people think other things are reasonable.
You're trying to trap me into something that I'm not going to allow you to do.
Oh, you've already gotten
trapped.
No,
I have not been trapped. I believe absolutely in the Second Amendment that it shall not be infringed.
Yeah, the Second Amendment also says well-regulated mission.
You've got to go back to the Federalist Papers to see what that means, and it does not mean what you're intending.
Are you sure the shall not be infringed means exactly what you think it should be?
Well, I know the English language, and I know what it says.
Then what did Judge Scalia say?
It really doesn't matter because...
Yes, it matters exactly.
Well,
he's the final arbiter of what it means.
Not necessarily. The Supreme Court has changed its mind on many, many issues. Just because the Supreme Court rules something now does not mean it does not change it later.
Let me let Connie make a comment, and then I want to get another listener on the air. Connie?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, like Kentuckians, I think Mark was talking about, like in our state. I mean, and, you know, when we've done this work, the most important thing we're concerned about background checks and closing loopholes as far as domestic violence and felons. And overwhelmingly, 82%, you know, of Americans support background checks or all gun sales. So I think this gets to the part of, like, what do, you know, Americans want our officials to do? And this is an issue where Americans clearly agree that background checks, you know, are important and necessary, and they support that, but our legislators are, like, failing us in this respect, that they are not following the will of the people on this issue, and it has to do with the money from the gun lobby.
Let me go back to the phone and talk to Ed from Lexington. Ed, thank you for being on the line for our program. Go right ahead.
I was raised with guns. I got my first gun when I was 10 years old. My dad taught me how to shoot it. But you know what? Those were very primitive weapons. Those were old side-by-side shotguns, and everybody had one. They were not 37. They were not multi-shot clip guns that you could kill innocent people from a quarter of a mile away. The Second Amendment was written in a different time. It was written in a time when people had muzzleloader guns, and if you shot somebody, you better kill him, because if you didn't, he was going to take your gun away from you and beat you to death with it. And now we have used that as an excuse to allow a bunch of cops 20-shot clips, knowing that they can kill innocent people with no retribution. And it's totally different than the Second Amendment. I'm a gun owner. I've got a lot of guns, but they're not the kind of guns that kill people. They're hunting guns. And I think this argument that every person ought to have a gun, you talk about make America great again. America was great 50 years ago when I didn't have to carry a gun to church, when I didn't have to have a gun to protect me from everybody.
All right, Ed, thank you so much for your call. Connie, you reacting to Ed?
Yes, I mean, I agree with him 100%. I mean, I grew up around guns. My dad was a hunter. But it's this ramped up fear, you know, that the gun lobby has created in our country. And, I mean, everything he said is exactly right. I don't want to have to go to church. I mean, I'm not going to go to the church where, you know, people feel like they need to have an armed guard at that. That's not freedom. That's not what our country's about. And we need to do a better job of keeping guns out of the hands of dangerous people and being more proactive about the issue instead of always being reactive.
A question, or actually a comment, and a question, I guess, from Diane by email. I appreciate your discussion about this hot topic. I support Mark and Connie's work on gun statistics and gun sense legislation. My understanding, many guns involved are found to be stolen. How would Mr. Morgan address this? Is mandatory reporting of a stolen gun a possibility?
I wouldn't have a problem with that.
Would you, and this is a question that has come up, and it was one of the things that I was actually seeing. What about responsibility for having your gun stolen? A story that came out from 4 months ago, and yes, I can source it. In Georgia, Guys went through two neighborhoods. All they did was click the doors open. If the doors were unlocked, they went in. They checked only for guns. They got 62 guns in 2 hours. They never did not break a single piece of glass. Should those gun owners who did not lock up their weapons, who did not properly stow their weapons, should they be held responsible for not properly
not
stowing
their
guns?
Not in that situation. I don't believe that at all. I do believe in the first part, though, that we could have a law that makes it mandatory that if one of your weapons is stolen, that you have to report it immediately to law enforcement with serial number and so mm-hmm. forth. I think that is a really good idea, to be quite honest.
I agree
with
completely,
you.
Yes.
And I'm sorry.
I would love to see you introduce that in the session this year.
I have no problem with that.
Let me add, we have a minute.
I will get with you.
We have a minute remaining in the show. What can happen next? The question is, where can we have this discussion? How can we move forward and increase safety in this country to reduce gun violence? Representative Morgan?
Well, I mean, couldn't we first start with, let's have some mandatory sentences for people who use a gun during the commission of a felony? I mean, let's quit skirting around the issue. If you have a gun and you walk into break into a house, forget about breaking into the house. Go 10 years to jail because you've got a gun and you committed a felony.
Okay, let me ask Connie your recommendation. How should we get this discussion started? What we need to do next?
I mean, I think this needs to be a grassroots movement in that Americans need to let the legislators know that they are going to hold them responsible on this issue. We know there are ways that we can reduce gun violence. We're not going to stop all the violence in our country, but we can do some step-by-step approaches, closing loopholes, keeping guns out of the hands of dangerous people and domestic violence abusers. And those are steps that we can take.
Let me ask Mark Bryant. I'm sorry, Connie, we're out of time. Mark Bryant, where can listeners find this information? Your Gun Violence Archive.
GunViolenceArchive.org.
And it's there updated. How often, how updated is it?
It is updated to pretty much every 15 minutes it updates. We've had 7 new updates in the last hour.
All right. Thanks to our guests, Wesley Morgan, Connie Courtney, and Mark Bryant. Eastern Standard is a production of the WEKU stations at Eastern Kentucky University. Our producers, Emily Hutchinson, Brian Burkhart, and Zach Redding. Our technical director, Brian Bartlett. This show will be available online as a podcast later today at weku.fm and on the air Sunday evening at 6. For Eastern Standard, I'm John Hingsbergen. Thank you for tuning in.